Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.
Pause the cop in New York.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
We're talking today with three fairly recent visitors to the Holy Land, which is very appropriate for the end of Passover and the end of Holy Week. We're talking with Elizabeth Abraham, who is a member of Grace Lutheran Church in Champaign, and with Dave McWilliams, a member of Hessel Park Christian Reformed Church, and with John Setterland, who was the tour guide for the trip that these folks and others took October, November?
October.
And how long was the tour, John?
Well, we spent 2 weeks. It was the last week in October and the first week in November.
In November. Mm-hmm. And so that would be 2 weeks, one day of travel getting there. Of course, it's pretty far away.
It's an overnight trip to get there.
Uh-huh. And people went on this tour with you from all over the U.S.?
Yes. We had several from the East Coast and mainly from the Midwest, and most were from the Champaign-Urbana area.
Uh-huh. Elizabeth, how did you hear about this this tour?
Well, this was the second one that John had put together, and I heard such glowing reports from a volunteer at Books to Prisoners, where I also volunteer. In addition, I did hear through my church bulletin about the next trip that was coming. So,
And why did you want to go? What interested you about going to Palestine and Israel?
Well, I'm half Lebanese.
Oh, you are.
So this is sort of going home.
Ah.
And also just the history and the beauty and just a place I've heard so much about my whole life.
But you had not been to Lebanon?
No, I've never been to Lebanon.
Never?
No.
So this was the closest you'd been.
Yeah, I felt fairly safe, very safe on this trip. And I was attracted to the fact that we weren't just going to one place. We were going to Jordan. We were going to the West Bank. And actually staying in the West Bank for part of the trip, as well as staying in Israel.
And Dave, what about you, Dave McWilliams? How did you first hear about this opportunity?
I think I first heard of it from John when he came to our church to preach, actually. But then that was before the year before the previous trip. And again, we heard glowing reports from people who had gone on that trip, and so my wife and I had always been interested in going to the Holy Land, and my father he still has great memories of when he went to the Holy Land, which is like 40 years ago
uh-huh.
now. So it was something that was on my to go list for a long time, and also like Liz, my wife and I, Valerie, were interested in seeing some of the Palestinian side of the picture to the Middle East too, and we knew that on that trip you get an opportunity to be in the West Bank and to see what life is like for Palestinians living there.
John Sutherland, when you took this group last year, was it a different experience than 40 years ago when you took Dave's father?
Things have changed a lot in 40 years in Israel and Palestine.
You are a retired Lutheran pastor, but you haven't been retired that long. No.
Right.
Let's let people know about who are listening about your previous experience and why you thought it's important to give people this chance to go to the Holy Land. Tell them about your 2-year time as a volunteer on the West Bank.
When I did retire from my work in 2006.
As a campus pastor here at the University of Illinois.
Yes. I accepted an invitation from one of the congregations in the West Bank from their pastor to come and assist him in operating his congregation. That was the extent of the invitation. I didn't know what that meant, but I did go there and I spent then almost 2 years living there and working with the people of his Arabic-speaking congregation.
And I know that you had many visitors during that 2 year stint, because my wife and I were two of them, and you showed us around very effectively to some of the sites that we'd read about for years.
And I've never forgotten how blasted hot it was the weekend you were there.
Well, it was very hot, very hot. But it was a fascinating experience, and we really appreciated it. And we've recommended these tours you give. Now, do you do this sort of these guided tours as a volunteer, or do you do it to make money? I mean, I know pastors, campus pastors particularly, never have much money to retire on.
I do not do it to make money. In fact, I had no intention of becoming a tour coordinator at all. But after my work over there, I was asked to speak in many places, especially churches, about my experiences, and I was then approached by many of the people who found it fascinating. Well, why didn't I organize a tour? Uh-huh. That's how that all started.
Uh-huh. Now, you do this through a local Champagne travel company, L&L. And since this is radio, I have to spell that. That's the letter L, not H-E-L-L. So it's L&L Travel Incorporated in Champaign. And if people want to learn about further tours, you can contact Lisa Hettinger, and her email is travel@lltravelagency.com, or you could call 217-344-6001. Now, why would I, as a host of a program that deals with ethics and values and spirituality and religion, even sort of help a group that takes people to Palestine and Israel? And for me, I guess the answer is partly what Dave was getting at. It's in the news every day. I mean, there are issues that come from that part of the world just all the time. What were some of the political issues that you were curious about when you and your wife decided to go, Dave?
Well, the stereotype of what, you know, you hear about people, Palestinians, is the suicide bombers and things like that. And we had heard from other people coming back that they were visiting with Christians in church, and there are a fairly large number of Christians living there as Palestinian Christians. And those were some of the people that we met. And they are, you know, as a Christian myself, they are my brothers and sisters in Christ. And so I wanted to see what life was like from their point of view, as opposed to, you know, the stereotype that you hear sometimes in the media.
And what kind of a vision did you have of Israelis in relation to Palestinians before you went?
Well, I started out work at the university working for an Israeli, actually, and so I've met a lot of Israelis through my years, and so I had a pretty good idea about the Israeli perspective on security, for example.
Sure.
And security is a big issue, of course, for them, and their right to exist is very important, obviously, too. So there is that side of the equation. So there's kind of a I don't know. I guess, you know, how far can you take it in terms of trying to be secure, in terms of how you treat, you know, the Palestinians?
And Elizabeth, what about you? Before you went to this part of the world, what were some of the issues you were curious about?
Well, I was curious to see the wall, just because I'd heard about the wall.
Sure.
And I just wanted to see for myself, experience for myself, how safe it was or unsafe it was. That was about, you know, politically, I knew it was a minefield of opinion. And I guess I was ambivalent. I could read something in the newspaper on one side or the other and equally feel it had validity. And so I wanted to somehow go over and take a look and see if somehow I could have, at least in my own mind, a sense of how we can go forward. And one of the great things about the tour was we did have conversations amongst ourselves about those issues and about the people with the people we met. So I don't know that we solved the problem.
Sure.
But at least I feel now I have more information to have an opinion and to be able to discuss the issues.
We're talking on Keeping the Faith this afternoon with Elizabeth Abraham, that you just heard speak, and before that, Dave McWilliams and John Sutherland, who in October and November of last year were for 2 weeks in Palestine and Israel and Jordan. We're happy to include listeners in this conversation. This is a live call-in show. So if you have a comment or a question you'd like to ask any of these guests or all of them, do give us a ring. In Champaign-Urbana, in the 217 area code, punch in 333-9455. That's 333-WILL, the call letters, of course, of the station. Or if you're listening long distance, punch in 1-800-222-9455 for a toll-free call. And that includes people who are listening online. And, of course, this program will be archived at the online site, which is will.illinois.edu/AM. Or to find the Keeping the Faith archives, you can put will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith. But we are eager to have people join this conversation, so do give us a call. John, how many people went on this tour last October?
There were 17 of us.
17. Tell us where you stayed.
Well, we flew from Chicago to Amman, Jordan, and we stayed 2 nights in a very nice hotel in Amman. Then we traveled to Jerusalem by bus, and we stayed at a Catholic retreat house near the Old City for 3 nights. And then we stayed at the Lutheran guest house in Beit Jala in the West Bank near Bethlehem. We stayed there for, I think, 7 nights. And then back to Amman for the last night before we flew out.
So you flew in and out of Jordan.
Yes.
And have you taken tours where people landed in Tel Aviv?
Yes. The first year that I took a group, we did that route. We traveled to Tel Aviv.
What's the advantage of either?
I think it's easier traveling to Tel Aviv. But, of course, then that eliminates the possibility of going to Jordan, which was why we included it on the second trip.
So you cannot really go from Israel to Jordan and then back to Israel?
No. Not without a great deal of time-consuming grief.
And, of course, the Israelis are very concerned with security, and that's one of the things that happens. We do have a caller waiting, a caller from Marseille, or is that Marcel? I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but on our toll-free line, line 4. Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Well, I wish you could tell me how to pronounce it, because we're living up here, and Southern Illinois has got Vienna, but it's Vienna. So.
How do you pronounce the name of your town?
Marseille's.
Marseilles, all right.
Somebody said that to me when I was a kid. But I had the opportunity to apologize to a Jewish kid I grew up with because we teased him for being Jewish. And I had that opportunity yesterday. And the white pelicans were flying overhead.
Where did you grow up?
Right around here.
Okay.
And his father died, and I had a chance to apologize to him because I was just a kid. I didn't know what I was doing.
And I take it in your town in Southern Illinois, there were very few Jewish children, very few Jewish families.
That's right. And I felt every time I see on the news where somebody picks on somebody who's Jewish, it makes me sick in my gut for what I did to him. I didn't do anything bad to him. We just teased him, you know. I was like in fourth or fifth grade. But it's lived with me forever.
That can be pretty tough when you're that age.
Yeah, it was like Lord of the Flies, you know.
Children can be mean and cruel. Did you were you going to church yourself at that time? Were you raised in a Christian family? And
well, that's what they said that they were.
Okay,
but I mean, it's like my stepfather told me how great Hitler was, and my father told me how great Stalin was.
Wow.
I mean, it's a three-ring circus, but I had the opportunity to apologize to him, and I did.
And how did this...
I saw the black and white film where the Nazis, what they did. And every time I saw that, you know, where that little girl was trying to go to her mother. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah, I forget the exact title. Something in Fog, Night in Fog.
And that Nazi wouldn't let her go to her mother, and they all got bumped off.
Right.
I mean, it makes me sick.
How did this childhood Jewish friend respond when you told him you were sorry?
He told me that I have... He told me... Sorry.
That's all right.
He forgave me. And he told me I am not part of that anti-Semitism. That's what happened. He told me I'm not part of that anti-Semitism.
Well, thank you for both apologizing.
I can't stand seeing what's going on in the Mideast now. Uh-huh. Because the Jews have been plagued in Arab countries, and they're mad at them for having 9 or 10,000 square miles of land that they can live in. Well, guess what? The Jews have been plagued from Morocco to Iran, and they've been cast out and treated like garbage, and it's not right. And if the Jews... They've got a few square miles of land, and the Arabs got oil. They got everything. And I'm not anti-Islam either. I'm just saying, why are they obsessed with picking on Jews? Because when I was a kid, I didn't even know what I was doing. I was in fourth or fifth grade. These guys are grown men, and I'm going to hang up. Thank you.
Well, thank you for raising several important issues. We'll give our guests here in the studio a chance to respond. Thanks for the call. So that raises several issues mm-hmm. about anti-Semitism, anti-Jewishness, attitudes between, as our caller said, Arabs and Arab countries and Israel. What were some of the things you experienced personally when you were there for those 2 weeks? Elizabeth, let's start with you.
I think the whole issue the caller brought up about stereotypes, and one was that the Arabs have oil. Jordan doesn't have oil. So I think the thing that struck me about Jordan was it's a very, very dry country. They barely have water. And so these are people, you know, just like everyone else, struggling to make a living. It isn't all about politics all the time. So I guess that was the, you know, one of the stereotypes that sort of I was challenged when I visited Jordan. They're not wealthy. They don't have water. They don't have oil. And they're trying to make a life in a desert with a lot of refugees that they're trying to take care of. So
refugees who had lived in what is now Israel.
Right. And, yeah, I understand it used to be part of Jordan. So I guess it's confusing. Just where the people truly are citizens from. The idea that there are people that really don't have a country. Literally, it was, you know, taken over, their part. And they're not really Jordanians either. They just don't, you know, they're in camps. And they've been in camps for over 50 years. So, I mean, that is an issue. That's a... issue that we need to factor in when we're discussing fairness or security.
And John, when you lived in the West Bank for two years, you were with Palestinian Christians and Muslims, right?
Right.
And the church where you were helping out the pastor had a home for boys who came from families that were both Christian and Muslim.
Yes, a boarding home.
And the children got along?
They got along very well. And I will also add to that that the church-run schools, and this includes Orthodox, Roman Catholic, and Lutheran, and Anglican schools in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, all have Muslim children and Christian children going to school together. And to me, this is one of the greatest efforts towards making peace between the Christian and the Muslim world.
There have been many efforts over many decades to try to bring peace between those two groups. And, of course, the animosities run deep and the history is very convoluted and difficult to even understand. But so much of it goes back to the Bible. And what do you as a Lutheran pastor say to people who say, but didn't God give this land to the Jews? Isn't this the land of milk and honey that God promised them?
What do I say? I say this is a very difficult issue indeed. And it is a problem that the Palestinian Christians have to work with. As my pastor there said, yes, we know that the Bible is a Jewish book. We have to admit that. And there's no doubt about it that Jesus of Nazareth was Jewish. So this presents, I think you could say, a bitter pill for the Christians there to swallow every time they read the word Israel. Because,
Christian Arabs, yeah.
Yes, because the word Israel in the Bible denotes something quite different from the state of Israel,
sure,
which was founded in 1948.
And the current politics. So Dave, you were nodding your head. Do you want to add something?
Well, I know that there are groups of Christians that do. They read Israel in the Bible, and they think that's the same thing as the state of Israel, the modern state of Israel. But I personally don't see it that way either. As a Christian, I see that the new Israel is the kingdom of God, and that's the way I read the Bible. So the kingdom of God is, and so we've been grafted in, I guess, you know, that's a Bible language or whatever, but grafted in to God's kingdom. And so it's not a state anymore. It's from a Christian point of view, I should say.
But don't Christians have to be very careful of this being sort of supersessionist, that the Christians have replaced the Jews in God's favor? Certainly God has never turned his back on Jews.
True. That's a good point. I don't have a good answer for that.
Well, it's difficult to even talk about, but let's continue. Our guests today are Elizabeth Abraham and David McWilliams and John Sutherland, talking about their experience in the West Bank and in Israel just at the end of last year. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. And as we're approaching about halfway through today's program, let me mention that next week we have a very special guest, someone who grew up in Champaign-Urbana, attended Centennial High School. Her parents were from two different countries in Africa, and she has become a quite world-renowned singer. Her base is in New York City, and makes several trips to Africa a year. Her name is Laura Kakoma, locally, but she sings under the name of Somi, S-O-M-I. She gave three recent concerts back here in her hometown at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, and we're very pleased to be able to interview her by phone next Sunday. That's May 1st from 5 to 6 p.m. on WILL AM. We'll be playing several cuts from some of her African-inspired music, so that will be May 1st. On May 8th, we continue our little mini-series here of New York musical artists, and John Ellis, who's a jazz saxophone player with his group Double Wide, which has had several very successful albums recently, will be again, talking with him by phone and playing some of his very interesting jazz music and talking about, with both these artists, the value of music. Our guest on Keeping the Faith, May 15, that Sunday night, will be talking with a high school English teacher, Ellen Dahlke from Urbana High School, who's helped start a social justice committee of students, of which, to which she's the advisor. She and two students will be our guests on the 15th of May, and we'll talk about the social justice committee there and some of the issues that these young high school students are involved with in a very active way. It's very appropriate for our, given our conversation today about difficulties in the Middle East, that on May 22nd, our guest will be the executive director of the FOR, the Fellowship of Reconciliation, the oldest interfaith peace group in the United States. They'll be celebrating their 100-year centenary very soon. Mark Johnson will be our guest by phone on the 22nd, talking about why there's so much fear of peace. And then for the last Sunday in May, our guest will be John Esposito, who is the author of Islamophobia and the Challenge of Pluralism in the 21st Century. Don Nolan will be interviewing Professor John Esposito. Professor Esposito spoke here at the University of Illinois just last week, sponsored by the Religious Studies Department here at the University of Illinois as a guest lecturer. So that'll be a very interesting program on May 29. Those are some of the programs coming up here on Keeping the Faith. Hope you will listen and give us a call. Let me give the phone numbers again if you'd like to talk with our guests today. If you're listening and it's a long-distance call to Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, punch in 1-800-222-9455. And if it's a local call, there are several lines. You can reach our good engineer, Kyle Croa, at 333-9455. Kyle will put you online to talk with us on our in the studio, our guest in the studio. We do remind you to turn your radio down after you're connected by phone with us because we do have a slight delay, and it'll confuse you if your radio is in your ear as well as your phone. So do give us a call, 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. John, you're going to be giving another tour next fall, October 25th through November 9 this year, 2011. How will that tour be different than this? Will it go to the same places generally?
It'll be quite a bit the same, I think. We are planning to fly to Jordan first. The reason for that is it allows us to tour the famous site of Petra, the ancient city carved in the sandstone cliffs of the desert in Jordan. And we will be staying in Jerusalem for part of the time and in the West Bank for part of the time.
And Petra is a World Heritage Site. It's just a renowned work of amazing art and architecture and religion.
It's a city that dates, well, the architecture that you see dates back to about the first century. And it is a very large area. We could have spent several days there. We just had it was a one-day trip from Amman that we did spend.
Now, when you plan these trips, you've done this now how many times?
I've done two.
Two official tours, and before that you took several friends around.
Right. When I lived there, I entertained guests quite often.
Regularly, so. Yes. Mm-hmm. And when you think about what sort of the ideal size, how many people would you like to take with you?
The maximum that I will take is 18.
Okay.
And the reason for that is I think that's all I can manage, but it also is the size of the small buses that they run over there, which is, in my opinion, much more ideal for touring than these large diesel buses.
Uh-huh. And as you're traveling around, Dave and Elizabeth, What's it like to be in a land that you've read about in your religious life since you were a child?
I don't know how to put it into words. It was just fabulous. It was wonderful. What I wasn't expecting was the physical beauty of the places. Mount Nebo, the Mediterranean, the sky. You know, living in central Illinois, we have our wonderful skyscapes, for lack of mountains. And the skies were just beautiful. It was just a physically beautiful place and a place of much variety.
Galilee is so different from the land between there and Jerusalem.
And the dryness of the desert, you know, has its own beauty. So I guess my mouth just was hanging open most of the time, staring out the window or walking around. It was just so much to take in. And then there's the history. Going to Jericho or, just being in Jerusalem. And it's just amazing that for some people, that's just where they live. It's not a biblical place. It's where they're selling falafel.
Or repairing refrigerators.
Or anything. Yeah, it was just an amazing trip.
Did you get to the Dead Sea?
Yes, floated on it. Yes.
And Masada?
Masada. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Dave, what are some of the high points in your memory as you look back those few months from when you were there? What sticks out most sort of emotionally for you?
Well, I think Mount Nebo was a high point for me. It's the site where Moses looked down on the Promised Land and God said, you know, this is the land I'm going to give you. But he wasn't allowed to go there. Beautiful view, and you can see the Jordan River and the Jordan Valley and Jericho. And then all the places where Jesus walked and, you know, that you read about in the New Testament is special to be able to see those places like the Garden of Gethsemane and things like that to say, you know, this is where Jesus walked. You know, it's very special.
Being reminded fairly regularly by my spouse that I'm kind of a contrarian, I enjoyed telling several people that when I was there, I walked today where Judas walked.
Ah, true.
The other joke is that the way most tour groups go, you try to see as much as you can in your limited time. So I ran today where Jesus walked.
When you're in the old city in Jerusalem, and I guess year-round, there are tourists there from all over the world, from three of the world's great religions, because, of course, it's the Holy Land, one of the holy spots for Muslims and, of course, for Jews and Christians. It seems to always be crowded with tourists from literally everywhere. You hear languages. That was part of the appeal to me. You'd sit in a little cafe or bar somewhere, and you just never knew what you might be hearing. And, of course, you didn't know if people could speak English as you were talking to your friends, and so you'd have to be a bit circumspect. But I love the cosmopolitan nature of Jerusalem and Tel Aviv as well and other places.
Yeah, I felt the same way. And just the different quarters within the old city, you know, the Muslim quarter and the – so you go to the Muslim section and you see, you know, all these people dressed, you know, differently than what you see normally, you know, here in Champaign-Urbana or whatever. And then you go to the Jewish area and you see a very different kind of people and different dress and different language. And so I really enjoy that too, the different cultures coming together, not only the ones of the tourists, but the ones of the people living there in the city of Jerusalem.
Again, listeners who might be interested in taking this tour next fall, October 25 through November 9, can contact L&L Travel in Champaign. They can ask for Lisa Hettinger, and her email is travel at IALLTravelAgency.com, or they may phone 217-344-6001. John Sutherland is the retired Lutheran pastor who will be leading his third tour. Elizabeth, did you feel safe when you were there? Were you worried about terrorist bombs and buses or the Israeli soldiers who are maybe 18 or 19 years old walking around with Uzi?
I wasn't afraid at all. I was more concerned that it would take us too long to get through a checkpoint, that we wouldn't be able to see all we wanted to see. But as far as danger, personally feeling danger, no. Now, no why, matter where.
Why not? You hear about violence all the time, it seems like, from that region.
I think it's as if I were walking down a street in Champaign or Urbana and I could get mugged, or I could be in New York City or Oklahoma City when some crazy person decided to blow something up. Sure. I felt, you know, the same touring in Jordan or the West Bank or Israel as I would touring anywhere else. It was new and strange, so I might want to be a little bit careful. I might not know the customs.
Sure.
But no, wasn't at all.
And how did you feel as a female in a place where in both Arab culture and Israeli culture, perhaps there's not total equality for women?
Well, it's interesting. When you're in a group, you sort of just blend with the group. But we also, several of us went out in Bejala. We walked to Bethlehem, which is really cool because you could physically walk from where we were staying into Bethlehem. And there were three of us that did that. And we were not stared at, I would say, or bothered in any way. So there was a real freedom in doing that. Whether I would walk alone at night, I probably wouldn't do that anywhere.
Uh-huh.
But three of us walking down the road to Bethlehem, no problem.
Sure. Now, did you wear a head covering like the Muslim women would have been largely in that community?
No.
No scarf?
No.
Very few of the Christian women wear a head covering.
I see. All right. But the Muslim women mostly do?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
But did not feel uncomfortable not doing so.
Okay. Did you visit a mosque anywhere on your travels?
Not inside.
No. We were on the
Temple
Mount where the Al-Aqsa Mosque is, but mm-hmm. that is closed to visitors.
It is, since
the Second Intifada, both the Great Mosque there and the Dome of the Rock have been closed to non-Muslims.
Yes. Dave, you were traveling with your wife, Valerie, you mentioned earlier. Did you and she feel safe there?
Yes. The previous group that we had talked to who gave the glowing reports that actually led to us going there had told us the same thing. They felt very safe there. And also, I think we've been told that, you know, some people say, well, you went to the West Bank, that's very dangerous. But we didn't feel that way at all. And in fact, I think they appreciate having Western tourists there because they need it for the economy. For people who are, you know, have shops and things like that, who are selling things or coffee shops or whatever, I think they really, appreciate having Western tourists there. So it's more, you almost feel more appreciated than, you know.
What did you think of the food as you traveled in the West Bank and in the rest of Israel?
Well, hey, it was home week for me. It tasted great. I loved it. They talk about the Mediterranean diet, and that's what we had. We had lots of fruits and vegetables. It was very healthy, very tasty.
I felt the same way. My wife and I enjoyed the food very much.
And can you get alcohol in Muslim territory?
Yeah. No problem in the Christian areas. Uh-huh. So I don't think we had – did we have access to alcohol in Jordan? I don't know. Not that we're seeking
yes,
it out.
Yes, some people did order at the restaurant.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. I think it wasn't put out, you know,
uh-huh.
but you could order beer. Someone ordered beer.
Oh, okay.
Elizabeth, you mentioned at the beginning of the program that you came from a family that was half Lebanese. Tell us about your family of origin.
Oh, okay. Well, my father was Lebanese. My mother was Italian, so it was a nice Mediterranean mix of passion and energy, shall we say. But Mediterranean food, listening to Arabic being spoken, the dancing, that was all part of growing up. 4th of July, we had Lahmishwi, which was shish kebab.
Was your father religious?
They were Christians, yes.
Lebanese.
No, my dad was not religious, but his extended family were Christians.
And your mother was Catholic?
She was Roman Catholic, yes.
When you got into the Middle East and had all that familiar food, did you learn any new recipes?
No, I don't think I did. It isn't that everything I ate I'd had before. It's just different combinations. I think the new part was having those things for breakfast. Olives for breakfast, things like that. Yeah.
One of the things my wife and I enjoyed when we were staying in Bet Jala at the Lutheran guest house there were the breakfasts. And we still will occasionally, just to remember those days, add some good yogurt to our cereal and some of the other things that they had there. It was a real delight.
We enjoy the za'atar, is that what you call it? Za'atar. In fact, my wife has been using it a lot more in her cooking in our house. And you can get it locally, so we're still using it. So
tell us what za'atar is.
It's a spice.
Yeah, it's powdered thyme mixed with sesame seeds.
Oh. Mm. How does one eat it? I probably didn't know what it was.
Well, I would eat it. It was one of my favorite things there. I would eat it by putting a spoonful of this powdery relish on my plate and then dipping my bread in olive oil and then having that stick to the olive oil, eating it with bread, in other words.
It's very good.
I think one of the things that I want to mention is the experience John provided for us. We were able to pick olives at the school, the boarding school. I guess it's not uncommon to have olive trees. And we were there. The tour was designed so we'd be there during the olive harvest. And so we got to interact with the young boys and at the boarding house and or boarding school, and we picked the olives, and were able to take the olives to the olive press, which was this big old stone that's probably 1,000 years old, and we were able to bring olive oil home. At least I brought olive oil.
We did too.
Home. Yeah, and it was just such a wonderful. I mean, that thought in terms of history, people have been doing this for thousands of years, thousands and thousands of years.
In fact, they have olive trees that are thousands of years old there.
Yeah.
That may have been walked by
Judas.
Patriarchs. And, That's right. Since today is Easter Sunday for Christians around the world, John, you spent a couple Holy Weeks in Bet Jala, just, 6 or 7 miles from Jerusalem.
Right.
Tell us what Easter Sunday is like in Jerusalem.
Well, I'm going to modify the question a little because the biggie is on Easter Saturday. And during the day in Jerusalem, the mysterious fire of the resurrection appears in the center of the shrine, the grave spot of Jesus. And the pilgrims are gathered around by the thousands, packing the rotunda of the big church there. And they all have their candles, and this fire then lights all the candles, and they spill out into the streets, and the flame is spread throughout the city. And it is also then brought to the checkpoint, the checkpoints, and so it goes through the checkpoints to the Christians in the West Bank, both in Ramallah and in Bethlehem. And meanwhile, back in Beit Jala, middle of the afternoon, the Christians all gather out in the streets, start filling the streets. And they're singing and dancing and a lot of patriotic songs interspersed with religious songs. And then whenever it's possible, whenever the flame from Holy Sepulchre Church has gotten through the checkpoint and brought to Bethlehem, it's transferred then to individual cars to take it to the various Beit Jala, Beit Sahur, the Bethlehem churches, and so forth. And the one car with a big torch then on top, and decorated with flowers and everything, slowly comes up the hill through this crowd from Bethlehem to Beit Jala, and all the church bells ring, and the people crowd around and sing, and very, very happy in their Easter finery, and then they all have candles or these little neat little hurricane lamps or something, and they get their own flame and take it to their home then for Easter.
Now, as you started that story, you told about the flame that mysteriously appears in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre.
Right. Well, the Greek patriarch is inside, alone inside the shrine itself, and the flame comes down to him from heaven.
Now, excuse a skeptical Western question, but if it were to be discovered that there was a propane tank that supplied the gas that provided that flame originally, would that hurt people's faith?
I doubt it.
Interesting.
It's a wonderful, joyous time. Uh-huh. And then on Easter, the churches are decorated with flowers on Easter Sunday, and the Paschal candle is lit from this flame. Oh, and by the way, a chartered plane takes that same flame to Athens, so the Greek Patriarch of Athens has the flame from Jerusalem on the right day, too, for his Easter liturgies. Easter Sunday, everyone is dressed up, and lots of flowers and lots of goodies to eat. And it's a big family time, as is everything else there. The extended family is the basis of the Palestinian society, and anything important happens in the context of family gatherings.
Now, when this great Easter celebration is happening among Christians, do Muslim Arabs and Jews from Israel just sort of ignore all that, or do they feel somehow threatened by worldwide Christianity doing this in that location, imposing this on them?
I can't really speak for the other people. It doesn't seem so. Of course, the cities where I live, Bethlehem and Beit Jala, are basically Christian. So the Muslims are in the minority there, but that's very unusual. And this kind of celebration probably doesn't happen in the other
predominant parts of the West Bank.
Yeah, other cities of the West Bank. I do know that when these processions and I'm thinking also of the Palm Sunday procession in Jerusalem, and also this Holy Saturday event at the Resurrection Church. I know that the Israeli police are very nervous.
Oh. Now, since Easter can often be a time when Christians sort of get whipped up against Jews, like our earlier caller was referring to, and prejudices can be continued and inflamed. Does that ever happen there? Do Christians, in reading the passages from Scripture that seem to be blaming Jews for the death of Jesus, does that inflame passions and cause violence?
I don't think so. Remember that the Christian population of the entire Holy Land is very, very small, probably less than 5%.
Okay.
So it really doesn't present a theological threat or a political threat to anybody.
So that's much more of a threat where Christianity is predominant. Yeah. Okay. Well, we're down to our last 7 or 8 minutes for this program. We could still sneak in a phone call or two. If there are listeners who have a question or comment, 333-9455 if you're in the 217 area code. If it's a long-distance call, 1-800-222-9455 is a toll-free call. And again, if you missed part of this program, you may hear it at your leisure via your computer at will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith. And I might just mention that this program, as well as other locally produced programs here at WILL, are downloaded an amazing number of times as podcasts, and it is heard around the world because of new modern technology. And we'll be having some changes coming up in the next few months for this program and others produced here at WILL Studios that'll make them even better. So ask listeners to be aware of that. One thing you may know about already is the opportunity to hear on FM at 90.9 HD3 the programs that are on the AM channel. And last week, when there were tornadoes, of course, the AM stations can be difficult to hear sometimes in thunderstorms, but FM often is clear. And so if you do have an HD radio, you can turn it to 90.9 and then click over to HD3 to hear the AM programming, including this program. We have another caller, this time from Muhammad on line one. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith. Yes, go ahead, line one.
Hello, happy Easter.
Thank you.
Actually, this is Lisa Hettinger.
Yes.
I am from L&L Travel, and I've been listening to the program. It's been very nice, very informative. And I just want to add to the program anyone interested in joining the next group in October. We can email you the brochure, or we'd be happy to mail it out to you. And Father John Sutherland is the tour conductor. He would be, obviously I'm putting him out there, but very happy to meet and answer any questions in even a private meeting. And I just want to say thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling. And let me give John's phone number. He said I could do that if people have questions about the tour. Who would like to talk to him. His area code is 217, and his phone number is 828-1038. That's John Sutherland, spelled Sutterlund. John Pastor Sutherland is a retired Lutheran campus pastor from here at the University of Illinois. And after he retired, spent 2 years on the West Bank in Israel, Palestine. And that was Lisa Hettinger from L&L Travel. And again, folks who'd like a copy of that brochure can get it by emailing her at travel@lltravelagency.com. Lisa, she spells L-I-S-A. Well, for our last few minutes here, John, how long do you think you'll be doing this? You didn't really intend to become a travel director, but you obviously enjoy it.
It's a lot of work, but it's a great pleasure as well. So as long as I can get people that want to go, I'll do everything I can to make it possible.
How much does it cost?
We estimated, and I think we're holding to that estimate fairly closely, at $3,200.
And that's for 2 weeks, and that includes the airplane flights.
Including airfare, hotel, land transportation there, and well, that's it.
Now, that's so people will pay for their own food.
Some of the meals, yeah.
Some.
Some are included in the hotel rate.
Okay.
In fact, I think we had breakfast and dinner included in the hotels.
Okay. And when you stay at the Lutheran guest house in Beit Jala, which, by the way, is just a lovely place. Tell people what it's like. I mean, it's hard. You don't think of this in...
It looks like a very nice hotel. There's lots of marble, and it's
beautiful flowers,
place.
Wonderfully landscaped, yeah. Very clean.
Yeah, they have a really nice place to sit outside, out in the front, and just enjoy the beautiful weather. And
it was built just a few years ago.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Staff are wonderful.
Yeah, people are so friendly. And great breakfasts.
Yeah,
great
mentioned.
Breakfasts.
And good rates.
And good rates.
Well, it is. And it's inexpensive. I mean, to be able to be there for, you said, 2 weeks.
Right. Just this week I was reading in a travel magazine, a bargain trip to Israel for 9 days, and it cost as much as ours does. So I think that it helps to know people and to know where we're going and
right.
to decide. The big difference is that most tours to the Holy Land or any other place prefer to stay in 4 or 5 star hotels.
Sure.
And that just isn't necessary.
Uh-huh. But also you have the advantage of having lived there 2 years and have a network of friends and acquaintances in a lot of different places, and the opportunity to meet and perhaps even in people's homes to talk with people in the restaurants that they run and so forth, where they sit down and actually chat with you about their lives is a great experience.
I think there, as I was preparing for today, I went through my notes and was amazed at the number of places we went. We did all the tourist stuff that you'd ever want to do, in addition to the picking olives, and we visited a school. And uh-huh. As a former educator, that was important to me.
What were some of the places we haven't talked about in our 58 minutes here?
That we haven't. Capernaum? Did I say that right?
Capernaum.
Capernaum.
The city on the Sea of Galilee.
We went to Nazareth, the Church of the Annunciation, which was amazing. Haifa. We saw the Baha'i Gardens.
And the Stella Maris Church at Haifa. Mm-hmm.
And is it Caesarea?
Mm-hmm. That was Caesarea, yes.
Yeah.
And Dave, you're a photographer. What were some of the places that you loved photographing?
Well, I'd have to say Petra was number one. Petra uh-huh. is an incredible place, and I recommend it uh-huh. you know, for anyone. It's just it's gorgeous. But other than that, for photography, Tel Aviv was actually very beautiful. We were in Jaffa, which is right next to Tel Aviv. And the Sea of Galilee was gorgeous. There's a place above the Sea of Galilee, which is the Church of the Beatitudes. Beautiful location. Flowers everywhere, and just it was great.
Well, we're out of time. Our guests today on Keeping the Faith have been Elizabeth Abraham, a member of Grace Lutheran Church in Champaign, Dave McWilliams, a member of the Hessel Park Christian Reformed Church, and Pastor John Sutherland, a recently retired campus pastor here at the University of Illinois at the Lutheran Campus Center. We appreciate your being with us and talking about your trip to the Holy Land on Easter Sunday. Thank you for giving up part of your Easter day to come and share with our listeners your experience. My name is Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. Next week, as I mentioned earlier, we'll be talking with Somi, who's African-inspired singing, music, jazz, will be our guest on May 1st. Keeping the Faith. John Ellis, whose tenor saxophone you'll hear in just a few seconds as we close out. He's had provided our theme music for now these 12 years of Keeping the Faith here on WILL. We'll be interviewing him about his music on the 8th of May. Thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Thanks to the 946 listeners who called in pledges of support during our recently ended spring membership campaign. Your participation made it a big success. You raised more than $125,000 to support your local public radio station, WILL. If you missed our pledge week, you can still help reach the April campaign goal with an online contribution at willpledge.org. And thanks for your support.
Hi, I'm Jim Fleming, host of To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI. Looking for something to talk about at your next party or around the water cooler on Monday morning? Check in on To the Best of Our Knowledge each week. Science and religion, rethinking animal intelligence, maybe how memory works. Fascinating discussion on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening from 7 to 9 on AM 580. This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.